Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Spanish National Radio, NHK Japan, Russia's Sputnik Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Protest grew in Britain over proposed laws to impose harsh prison sentences on demonstrators. The Pope made an Easter message condemning the ongoing wars in Syria, Yemen, and Libya, and the proliferation of weapons while the pandemic creates more struggle. Spanish National Radio.
Tens of thousands of people demonstrated in cities across Britain on Saturday against the new law on policing and sentencing, which would restrict protests. Demonstrators say the bill seeks to limit the right to protest and constitutes an attack on democracy. The Police, Crime, Sentencing and Courts Bill allows police to break up unauthorized encampments and to arrest protesters if the gatherings are considered a, quote, public nuisance. The new legislation would impose time and noise limits on the demonstrations. The bill passed its second reading in the House of Commons in March and comes on the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests arising last spring after the police killing of George Floyd in the United States. This weekend's demonstrations were called by a variety of organizations, including Extinction Rebellion, the Socialist Workers' Party, and Stand Up to Racism. The opposition Labour Party also took part in the protests. The protests, called Kill the Bill, were held in at least 25 cities in England and Wales, with the largest in the capital, London. While the marches were peaceful at the end, there were clashes between hooded protesters and police who said they'd made over 100 arrests. The legislation is expected to be passed in June by Britain's majority Conservative government. Former Labour leader and MP Jeremy Corbyn took part in the demonstration in London and encouraged others to do so as well.
That right, which gives a voice to those often unheard, is once again under threat from a dangerous bill which effectively criminalises peaceful protest. Just this month, we saw a vigil attacked by the police, not even a protest, a dignified remembrance moment for the horrific murder of Sarah Everard. The Conservatives now want the right to ban any protest, simply because they deem it a nuisance, or using their words, annoying. Annoying the powerful is not a crime. And I'll tell you something, we're annoying them this week.
In his Easter message this past Sunday, Pope Francis condemned the ongoing wars in Syria, Yemen, and Libya, saying that it was scandalous that armed conflicts have not ended and military arsenals are being strengthened. He hoped he would inspire world leaders to curb the race for new weaponry, denouncing in particular the insidious and horrible landmines.
La pandemia è ancora in pieno corso.
The pandemic is still spreading. The social and economic crisis remains severe, especially for the poor. Nonetheless, and this is scandalous, armed conflicts have not ended, and military arsenals are being strengthened.
E si rafforzano gli arsenali militari.
The Pope included in his prayers Lebanon, Iraq, Ukraine, Haiti, Myanmar, Sahel, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Tigray, Mozambique, and Nagorno-Karabakh. He also spoke in favor of a two-state solution in the Middle East, calling on Israel and Palestine to rediscover the power of dialogue so that the two states might dwell side by side in peace and prosperity. Addressing the COVID-19 pandemic directly, Francis encouraged wealthy countries to distribute their vaccines to poorer nations.
Impegno condiviso per superare i ritardi nella loro distribuzione e favorirne la condivisione, specialmente con i paesi più poveri.
Shortly before the Christian Holy Week, Pope Francis sent a kind message and a personal message to the whistleblower and WikiLeaks publisher, Julian Assange, who remains in a British maximum security prison as he faces possible extradition to the United States.
Those reports by Allison Hughes were from Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Her news reports are now a daily segment of a magazine-style program, which may be heard at their website rtve.es and by podcast as REE. On shortwave, they broadcast from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time at 17855 and 11940, although I cannot pick up their signal here in California. Next, NHK Japan. An update on Myanmar, where more citizens have been murdered by the military junta and celebrities have been targeted for speaking out. The Japanese government will decide next week whether to discharge vast quantities of radioactively contaminated water from Fukushima into the Pacific Ocean. NHK Japan.
Turning to Myanmar, where the military has reportedly used machine guns to kill more people protesting against its coup. At least 13 people died on Wednesday. People continue to take to the streets across the country to protest the February 1st coup. Local media say the military attacked demonstrators with machine guns and grenades in the northwestern town of Calais. A local human rights group says 598 civilians have been killed so far. In the largest city of Yangon, demonstrators called on people to boycott products from China. Myanmar's military calls Beijing a strategic partner. Airstrikes have targeted ethnic minority armed groups supporting the protesters. Ground troops advanced into areas near the southeastern border with Thailand on Wednesday, clashing with forces from the Karen minority. Military-controlled television reported that celebrities, including actors and singers, have been placed on a wanted list for allegedly inciting people to join the civil disobedience movement. Meanwhile, Myanmar's ambassador to the UK says he's been locked out of his embassy in London.
This kind of coup, in the middle of London, you know, this kind of coup is not going to happen.
Sources say the ambassador's deputy and military attaché shut him out on Wednesday. He broke ranks with the junta last month, calling for the release of detained leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi. Japan could decide as early as next week how to dispose of wastewater from a crippled Fukushima nuclear plant that's been accumulating for about a decade. The government seems to be leaning towards diluting the radioactive water and releasing it into the sea. Prime Minister Suga Yoshihide met Wednesday with the head of a national organization representing fisheries. An expert government panel deemed the method safe, but the industry is worried it could affect their livelihoods.
I don't think we can get the consent of fishermen and people in Japan. We are totally opposed to the expert's suggestion of dumping the wastewater into the ocean.
Kishi says the government needs to ensure everyone believes this plan is safe, so fishermen won't lose customers.
I'm worried about how consumers will react after the water is released, and also whether consumers will accept our fish and other marine products.
I doubt the government cares about us. I feel like we're really out of the loop.
The government says it will do everything possible to prevent harmful rumors from spreading. The Fukushima Daiichi plant produces 140 tons of contaminated water every day when it cools molten nuclear fuel. The water mixes with the rain and groundwater that flows through the damaged reactors. The water is treated, but still contains radioactive substances, including tritium. The plant's operator has built more than 1,000 storage tanks, but says it will fill up next year.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355, or on the web anytime at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Sputnik Radio. On George Galloway's program, veteran United Nations journalist Joe Loria discussed the state of Libya 10 years after the overthrow of Gaddafi. Joe describes it as utter chaos with mass poverty, migrations, and jihadists. He also explains the disinformation that the United States presented to the United Nations and NATO to justify the war, all of which was revealed in British courts in 2016. Russia's Sputnik Radio.
10 years ago, since the Arab Spring, civil war broke out in Libya as a result of the overthrow and collapse of the government and indeed the killing of Muammar Gaddafi.
Joining us now to discuss the state of Libya 10 years on from the civil war is investigative journalist with bylines including The Times and The Wall Street Journal, and indeed the editor of Consortium News, Joe Loria. 10 years on from the overthrowing of Gaddafi with 20,000 foreign troops still there, what's the state of Libya now?
It's still utter chaos, as anyone at the time back in 2011 could have predicted. But, of course, the U.S. misled the world at the U.N. Security Council, where I was based as a U.N. correspondent at that time, when Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador, told the council that the no-fly zone that she was seeking to get would only be to protect civilian areas like Benghazi, and that instead it became an air force for the jihadists to overthrow the government of Muammar Gaddafi. She also spread, we should point out, at that council meeting, stories of disinformation about Gaddafi giving Viagra to his troops so that he could, so they could rape women. All of these stories about the imminent danger to civilians in cities, particularly Benghazi in Libya, from Gaddafi's forces became the basis for the intervention that NATO led. And Obama went on TV to talk about women and children and journalists being killed and raped, etc. People forget that there was a parliamentary report in 2016, a British parliamentary report, that showed that Secretary of State Clinton and Obama and the others were actually lying about an impending genocide. In Libya, they actually pointed out that this responsibility to protect, which was being bandied about at the time, 10 years ago, that this was an attempt to use military force for humanitarian reasons, that it was what a lot of people always suspected it was. In practice, in theory, it sounds great. In practice, it hides an agenda, and that agenda was to overthrow the government of Gaddafi. The British report, I have to say, it said that we've seen no evidence that the UK government carried out a proper analysis of the nature of the rebellion in Libya, and the UK strategy was founded on erroneous assumptions and incomplete understanding of the evidence. It says, despite his rhetoric, the proposition that Muammar Gaddafi would have ordered the massacre of civilians in Benghazi was not supported by the available evidence. So it was a complete lie. That report, the 2016 parliamentary report, was buried, especially in the U.S. media. And we still have this narrative believe that the U.S., which basically co-opted the great feelings that were going on across the region at that time, popular uprising of real democracy breaking out in the Middle East, this was co-opted to actually overthrow secular governments that the U.S. and the Gulf Arabs have been wanting to get rid of for a very long time. The remnants of Nasserism that existed, for example, the Assad dynasty in Syria, which still stands to this day. But the Gaddafi regime, of course, was overthrown in Libya. This is what this was all about all along. They absolutely lied to us. So what did they left? They left exactly what Gaddafi predicted. He was right. The jihadists were the danger across the whole region, but they are basically the foot soldiers of the Gulf Arabs and the United States and Britain and France to the extent that they participated.
Libya isn't the first time that a Western state or a group of Western states have decided that they're going to intervene in another country's affairs based on, at best, erroneous information. Why is that?
Because they, led by the United States, they want to have dominion over the entire world. I mean, the U.S. was left after World War II with bases around the world, a destroyed world except for the U.S. economy. And they took the opportunity to, rather than bring progress, social progress to the world, which the U.S. could have done, they stoked up the Cold War and used that as an excuse to continue to try to dominate the entire world. And that has not ended. That is getting more desperate in many ways, the U.S. leadership. They need governments that are going to obey them. They're not spreading democracy. They have geostrategic and economic interests, and they want obedience. That's a big part of it.
Libya was not great under Gaddafi, but the West somehow managed to make it even worse. It's chaos, as you said, worse than chaos. There is a so-called unity government, but in reality, there are parts, sections of Libya governed by their own governments in their, by, according to their own tribe.
Sometimes having chaos fits into their plans. It's very lucrative in terms of weapons sales, and it keeps any strong leader from coming to power there. Now, there is a split. There are two governments, one the UN, and it backs in Tripoli, this government of national accord, and then there's the one led in out of Benghazi by General Khalifa Haftar, which has the backing of the UAE, Jordan, Egypt, and Russia, whereas the other one is backed by the West. So you've got two factions fighting each other, and as you say, in other parts of Libya, there are basically warlords running, and there was also this knock-on effect where huge numbers of arms flowed out of Libya into the Sahel, which led to jihadist uprisings south of Libya as well, throughout the southern region below Libya in Africa. So this was a total chaos. It was based on a complete lie. And we've heard reports, of course, that slavery markets have returned to Libya. I mean, Western governments wanted Gaddafi out, even though he had given up his WMD right after the invasion of Iraq around 2003, and he seemed to be being brought back into the fold, and suddenly he had to be overthrown. They used the cover of the popular uprisings to make it look like that they were trying to support democracy in Libya, and instead they just wanted to get rid of this secular leader and who was independent.
Europe in particular, the Western countries in Europe, they have experienced the effect of it because obviously lots of Libyans have therefore had to flee the country and come on the shores of Western Europe, arriving here as refugees as a result.
That's right. That's absolutely right. The refugee crisis was very much caused by this NATO intervention. There had been many people, of course, trying to get into Italy from Libya before that, but it accelerated just as the war in Syria. It's very similar. Again, the West backing jihadists overthrow a secular leader led to very much to the refugee crisis. This is the agenda of the United States. It's been the agenda of Britain going way back to when they tried to kill Nasser in the 50s and helped establish the Muslim Brotherhood as a counterweight to the secular movement in Egypt and throughout the region. They want the most regressive, backward, religious, fanatical governments, or at least movements, to overthrow an independent, even socialist Arab countries. This is what they don't want, obviously. Any government that stands up and wants its own sovereignty is something really the U.S. cannot abide by. They need to have control. It's a kind of megalomaniacal attitude, but it is so intensely believed in the United States that they have the right to rule, that they are an exceptional nation, and all the rubbish we've always heard. And the people around the world in the region suffer very, very much.
Joe Laurier, thank you very much, as always, for coming on board.
That interview is by James Giles and Gayatri Galloway from the program called Sputnik on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. The United States released a report on human rights around the world, and Syria and other nations condemned it as delusional and hypocritical. Venezuela will ask the United Nations for assistance in removing landmines placed by Colombian groups near their border. After Afghanistan, Colombia has the most landmine victims in the world. The Biden administration lifted sanctions against officials of the International Criminal Court, though the U.S. still denies that they have any jurisdiction. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Syria says Washington's latest annual report on human rights around the world is based on delusions and lies and represents, quote, the height of hypocrisy, as Washington itself is the largest rights violator both inside and outside of its borders. Last week, the U.S. State Department released the so-called 2020 country reports on human rights practices. Upon the release of the report, Secretary of State Antony Blinken painted a grave picture of the deterioration of human rights in multiple countries and regions throughout the world, including Russia, Belarus, Cuba, Iran, and China. Regarding Syria, the report accused the government of President Bashar al-Assad of, quote, atrocities against the Syrian people. In a statement over the weekend, Syrian Foreign and Expatriates Ministry dismissed the allegations, saying they have all been taken from reports by terrorist organizations and their supporters and financiers in the region and beyond. Syria says that the report did not address the real tragedy facing the Syrian people, characterized by terrorism, its financing by the United States, which is now openly plundering Syrian oil and wheat. The people in Syria are suffering as a result of the inhumane economic blockade that has been imposed by the West with the aim of starving and impoverishing the nation. The ministry further accused Washington of hypocrisy over claims that human rights are a priority in its foreign policy. The U.S. report, the ministry said, propagates, quote, delusions and lies about Syria and other countries that do not agree with Washington's policies. The Venezuelan government says that it will ask the United Nations for technical assistance to clear the areas planted with landmines on the border with Colombia. These mines, which have caused 104 victims in Colombia between January and March alone, are scattered across the area near the border with Venezuela. Venezuelan Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza will formally request technical assistance to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to deactivate anti-personnel mines planted by Colombian irregular groups in the border area. According to the non-governmental organization SHORES, after Afghanistan, Colombia is the country with the most landmine victims in the world. And the organization recalled that these weapons were banned nearly 25 years ago, in 1997. The United States has lifted sanctions imposed by former President Donald Trump on officials of the International Criminal Court who are investigating the U.S. and Israel for war crimes in Afghanistan and Palestine. The executive action by President Joe Biden reverses one of the prior administration's more aggressive moves to target international institutions, although Biden administration officials said the U.S. still objects to the ICC assertion of jurisdiction over Washington. The ICC is a standing body based in The Hague, created in 2002 to prosecute international claims of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. The United States does not recognize jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court and refuses to abide by its decisions.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but their podcasts are not being updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I am grateful for donations from two listeners in Willits, California, one from Greensboro, North Carolina, and one from Utrecht, Netherlands. Many, many, many thanks. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Amnesty International released an annual report this time about COVID amplifying massive global inequalities and giving governments justification to crack down on human rights. Then brief global COVID reports, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Amnesty International's annual report says that COVID-19 has further amplified massive global inequalities, and it accuses many world leaders of using the pandemic to crack down on human rights. The report singles out three groups that have been disproportionately affected. First, women. They have suffered an increase in domestic violence and borne the burden of homeschooling, and in many cases lost their income because they had informal jobs that they couldn't do under lockdowns. Second, healthcare workers. Around the globe, they have suffered more fatalities than any other group. Chronic underinvestment in health systems means many hospitals are understaffed and their workers are not sufficiently protected against the virus. Now, the pandemic has also worsened the already precarious situation of refugees and migrants. That's the third group. Lockdowns, border closures, they have left some trapped in squalid camps without access to vital supplies.
New cases in India have passed 100,000 in a single day for the first time, meaning the country now has the world's highest recorded infection rate. Britain has confirmed that it will take further steps out of the lockdown beginning next week as its vaccine program continues apace. Non-essential shops can reopen and outdoor dining will also be allowed. And the Jerusalem Post is reporting that Pfizer has halted shipments of its vaccine to Israel after the country reportedly failed to pay for its last batch.
In New Zealand, which has announced that it will open a travel bubble with Australia from the 19th of April, allowing quarantine-free travel between the two countries. Singapore says that from next month it will accept visitors who use a mobile travel pass containing digital certificates for COVID-19 tests and vaccines. It's one of the first countries to adopt such an initiative. And new data from Israel suggests that vaccinated people are unlikely to pass the virus on to people who have not been vaccinated. A study indicates that as the number of vaccinated adults increases, infection rates amongst unvaccinated people in the same community decreases, especially amongst children.
In France, the number of patients in intensive care is at its highest in almost a year. France is now in a month-long lockdown. India has hit another new record number of daily cases. New Delhi, Mumbai, and dozens of other cities are imposing curfews to try and slow the soaring infections. And a top official at the European Medicines Agency says that there is a link between the AstraZeneca vaccine and rare blood clots. The agency is expected to release a new assessment of the drug this week.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.